This service was recorded on August the 24th, 1962, to deliver at Crete and the Methodist Church.
Lucius.
Oh, good evening, Lucius. So pleased you have come again.
Master, you must forgive me.
Yes.
The respite, which enables me to collect my thoughts, so that I may present to you a more clear and vivid picture of the things which are so important to you and to all of us. In the past few evenings, I have tried to depict certain aspects and conditions, the past lives in which we have all been part.
Yes.
I know, of course, the great difficulty that must remain in the minds of many people on your side to accept this truth, to be able to adjust themselves to the idea of reincarnation over a long period of earthly time. And yet it strikes me as most odd that so many people find it difficult to understand and to accept, because reincarnation means fundamentally the growth and the development of the human soul through eons of time, through many bodies, many conditions of life. When man thinks in the ordinary material sense of the development of the human race, and indeed the development of the world in which he lives, he finds little or no difficulty in accepting the fact that life as you know it has been going through many stages of evolution for eons and eons of time. Yet when man starts to think of the development of the human soul, he finds great difficulty in understanding, possibly because it is more easy for him to realize the development of human life as he knows it, the development of the human being through generations and generations of peoples and time. He does not seem to realize the evolution of the soul is equally, indeed more important than the development of the human race as you know it today. For after all, humanity developed from its earliest stages into something which now is recognizable as man. But before, long before he was recognized as man, he was one, as it were, of the animal kingdom. He developed and grew and changed in consequence. And as the physical frame and body of man changed, so it is essential that he should change from the point of view of the spirit. For the spirit must grow, the spirit must change, it must have greater understanding and greater realization of the importance of its life and expression. That is why we on this side particularly often find it difficult to understand why the mass of humanity on earth cannot adjust themselves to the idea of the development of the soul. Man himself, in a few years of earthly time, cannot possibly hope to accumulate all knowledge, all experience that will benefit him sufficiently to progress spiritually without returning to life in a new form, possibly even of the opposite sex to that which he was previously, so that he may have new experiences, new ideas, new opportunities, so that his soul may, as it were, be able to undergo all the essential and necessary developments for its general progression and unfoldment. That is why you, I, all of us, have been linked and blended together for so often, so long, and why we've experienced so much, so that we may achieve the full development and unfoldment of our spiritual experience and wisdom, and that the soul in consequence can become enriched and enlightened, and in so far remove itself completely from material things, because it has, as it were, taken from earth all that earth can give. For the earth life is, after all, the schoolroom through which we must all pass, and often return into a new class or a new state to experience things in that particular environment which we could not have gained in knowledge from the previous. When we have spoken to you of an Egyptian incarnation, or a Roman incarnation, or a medieval incarnation, or whether it is the incarnation in which you yourself are so closely associated with the soul whom you knew in that life at Chopin, whatever incarnation it was, in which your life and his and others were entwined, each and every one were essential and necessary, not only to you, but all concerned. Indeed, one can liken perhaps, as if it were, the chapters of a book, and each chapter has its full content and purpose, and if you can only appreciate more fully the whole of the book, when you have passed through its varying chapters, and you have noticed and noted vicissitudes and the experiences of the varying characters, not only your own, you have a full comprehension when the book is closed, and you then know so much more, and the story has to some extent been told, and there is always the possibility that a new book may be written, and a new chapter started on the lives of those of whom you were most interested in the first book. For indeed it is true that our lives are like chapters of books, and our experiences are contained therein. For this is indeed what Adin Bayou tells you, the book of life. It is symbolic, of course. In all religions, these truths have been preached and sometimes suppressed by other generations. Some who did not like the idea were afraid of it. Some who felt it was unwise to know these things. And of course, by the vast majority of materialistically minded people, they were inclined to suppress it because it did not please them. It interfered too much with our way of life. And this, of course, has happened so often. Even with our own group, there have been times when we've had great wisdom revealed to us, and in our certain existences we have been most impressed with these truths. And indeed, when we were so enlightened in regard to them, that there were other incarnations where these truths were suppressed, and we had often to take great risks to continue to find knowledge. And there were times, of course, when we had no desire in us to understand these things. These things of which we speak are experiences which have enriched our lives. And I want particularly for you to realize how much your life has been enriched by these truths, how it has given you more than ever the freedom of thought, the freedom of expression, and how it has enabled you to overcome many of the vicissitudes of even this present incarnation in which you find yourself, and how it has been brought to bear upon you in such a way that you have benefited not only yourself but others in consequence. And though you may look around you from time to time, as you well do, with despair in your heart, that those whom you love, who will not accept this truth, and who seem so anxious to avoid it, I want you to realize that you have sown a seed here and there, which one day will bear fruit. Last time we were speaking together on the incarnation, medieval times in Italy, the time of the Borgians, the time indeed in many respects of great enlightenment among certain peoples. Although it was in some senses a very dark age and a dangerous one, particularly for certain peoples, peoples particularly who had wealth and power, their lives were constantly in danger. Yet there were those such as yourself, and those near and dear to you, who were spiritually blessed, apart from being materially so. But as there were material dangers, so in a sense there were spiritual ones too. Indeed, these things invariably go hand in hand, because it is always so. Those who will seek and strive for spiritual truth and knowledge will always find difficulties and problems, will always find danger of a material nature and consequence, because those who seek truth will always find those of the opposite mind who do all in their power to destroy it for various reasons. Time which I speak, in which you yourself were much inclined towards this truth, this was a time of great danger and great strife. You yourself have had the vision and the experience of things of the spirit, and as you were told, for a son who became most enlightened, but who, through circumstances which would take too long to relate, became one in high office and position in a spiritual sense, and in the short time at his disposal, he was able to influence many people, but as indeed do all those who influence others for good. He brought upon himself the wrath of many who were opposed to these changes, thus he endeavored to bring changes. And in these times in which I speak, changes were not welcome, especially when it meant taking away power from people who misused it, especially when it meant taking away often wealth from people who adored it, and using that money and that power for good. His life was one spent in meditation and prayer and endeavouring to do good for the poor. He was a great soul, and he was one who was highly blessed.
I would wonder who that was, Lucy.
He was your son. And I knew at the time of revelation certain things of which I speak must come in their own way. And I beg of you to be patient. As I've said to you before, some things will cause you concern, other things will cause you to be mystified, and certain things will arouse your curiosity to a fever pitch when you will be bombarding me with such questions that I am not prepared yet to answer. So I beg of you to be patient. Certain things I want you to discover in the way in which it is best for you to know. I may point the way, as it were, I may give to you pointers, and you must, to some extent, make some effort yourself and those about you to discover certain facts which I can only hint at. Names we give you from time to time indicate much. But you see, my child, if I drew the rough sketch, I want you to do a little of the filling in. If I am, in a sense, to be the artist, you also must do the framing of the picture. So please, I beg of you, be patient with me. And if you do get to such a pitch, when you feel you cannot contain yourself any longer after having searched, then perhaps I will unbend and I will say to you, child, search your lot, it is obvious that you cannot find, and here is that which you seek. But I want you, and I know you are fully cooperative, but I want you to have the thrill and the excitement and the interest to search for something yourself, because it will be better so for you, and also the revelation will come in a way that will appeal to your nature, because if I detain you so much, although it would be for you, perhaps, a good thing, it also would take away something which I feel would perhaps not be the same. Just be patient. If you are, as I think you may well be on some points, faced with the fact that you cannot discover, I will answer. But when I speak to you, child, although I naturally wish you to respond, when my train of thought is set upon its journey, if you stop me, I find it difficult to recapture and re-memorize and to give to you that which I had desired. Try to be patient when I have finished. If then you wish to ask me questions, please so do, though there may not necessarily always be the time or the power to do. But when my train of thought is set, and you ask me something, it is as if, for the moment at least, I cannot command myself. Be patient.
Yes, I understand that. You say, I won't disturb you.
After all, you have some friends here who are as much in this as you, and they are younger and more agile, they're not mentally but physically, and they can search.
Yes.
For your age, you are a remarkable woman. How old are you, do you think? 4,000 years old, at least. How many incarnations have you had?
I'm
18, at least, to my knowledge. Time of ancient Egypt, in which you were one of the temple priestesses, is the first that I can discover. Then there was the Roman incarnation. Then there was the incarnation of medieval times. And in between there were various others, some short in length of years, and others long. Once, of course, you lived in Assyria, you were an Assyrian. On another occasion, in China, and were of China. You were a peasant, bore many children, and suffered greatly. Another occasion, to my knowledge, you were a Russian, and were of nobility, and were a part of the court of Russia. And your husband in that incarnation was called Frederick, and he was also the same Frederick who was later to return as Frederick Chopin. In that incarnation, you were much entwined, much in love, and much concerned one with the other. But your Egyptian incarnation was your first incarnation together. Then, of course, there was the incarnation which need to be your last, apart from the present, when you and Chopin were but friends. All these various souls that have come and spoken to you over the last few years, most of them have been associated with you in previous lives. So many of them. Many of the guides, many of the so-called guides that have come to you, not only through this instrument, but through others, have been part of previous incarnations. Do you know you had an incarnation at the time of Charles I, and that you were very much linked with him, and that at one time you endeavoured, and your family, to help him, and that you had to yourself flee the country because of the persecution of the Cromwellians? That is an incarnation of which very little of anything has ever been told you, but a very interesting one. There was a time when you yourself, strange as it may seem to you, were a member of the Catholic Church, and you were a priest. And all these things which I want to talk to you about are not easy things to discuss, because so much, to a certain extent, has become remote, and certain incarnations, quite frankly, were not perhaps very successful from the point of view of your development, and as such perhaps could be more or less forgotten, because they did not perhaps play the important part that others played. That is why I have already started to discuss with you the most important of your incarnations in which you learned most, and there's the ones are more dimly remembered and are less important in consequence. It's very difficult to explain all these things in words. For instance, now you have become more, shall we say, perfected. This is a strange word to use, but it's the only word I can think of. Perfected. From the point of view of your soul development. And when I mean perfected, I mean perfected in as much that it will not be necessary for me to return to Earth. For there is no more that Earth can offer you, no more that Earth can teach you. There is no reason why you should return to Earth in a physical body. Because all that you have achieved has made it possible for you, when you return here to the Spirit, made it possible for you to say, I have finished with the earth. And there, in a sense, you have become perfected. You cannot, therefore, have any need or any desire to return to earth. Those who are here, those who are so part of you, whose influence has been brought to bear upon you throughout the present life in which you live, they are waiting for the reunion. And those who are still left on earth to fulfill their development, to fulfill the work that has been set them, they will have their release from earthly things in due course. Here and there are some who will return again, no doubt, to earth, because their course is not yet run, and there is much yet that they have yet to discover and to learn and to develop within themselves, and most earnest to be there. But your tasks are nearly finished, and soon you will return to your true home. But before you come, we are anxious that you should have more knowledge and a clearer picture of much that has transpired and made all this possible. That is why we are so anxious in the coming months to reintroduce you to old acquaintances and old associations, old memories, so that your mind may be more clarified and the world and the earth less important, and in a sense perhaps even less for you. Although we may realize that while you are still upon the earth, you have much that you have to do, you have your life yet to finish, and you have yet much to consider, but it alters not the fact that to you, more and more you become conscious of the realities of spirit and less interested in the things of the earth in consequence. The changes that have taken place in you over centuries of time have been remarkable. But what I think is more remarkable and much more important is the effect that you have had upon others. The influences that have been brought to bear by your self, by your character, by your nature, on the minds and the lives of others. That, of course, has been no doubt the greatest thing of all, because in that you have found your own release, you have found your own development, and your own spiritual unfoldment. Of course, as I told you previously, in the time, my time, in Rome, in Pompeii, you were extraordinarily psychic. So much so that it caused some concern. And for a time, you were withdrawn from it through the fear at that time that it would be unwise for you physically and mentally to continue. And you became a disciple of Pharos, and your brother also, and other souls, the Vedis, in whose house so much happened, and who you were able to help at a later date, when much of their fortune had been taken from them. You were able to repay their interest, that affection. But of course, in that age in which I speak, you were given much yourself to good works, and much given to the things of the spirit, and you were much concerned more than any other time possibly with others, particularly were you concerned about your mother. And strange how that, in a sense, repeated itself in this present incarnation, your concern about your brother, who, by the way, is now here beside me, who sends his love and blessings and greetings to you, and who, in himself, is very conscious of the strong links that bind you, and have bound you for centuries of time. For he himself has been not only your brother, but also he has been, in past lives, your husband and your father, your mother who is present here too, who has grown great in wisdom and knowledge. She realizes only too well why it was essential that the vicissitudes of her past existence were such as they were. And it is good, and she realizes this only too well now, how good it was that she died at such an early age. For her work had been finished and accomplished. She had done, in a short time, much. And she had given to you birth, given to you opportunity. How little we understand each other, how little we understand ourselves, how little we realize the plan that has set us, and the path which is laid out for us. How little we realize the wisdom behind all these things that transpire, which causes often at the time great anguish, great pain, and yet out of this is born a new freedom and a new happiness which lasts beyond time itself and to time immemorial. We live in a world of great spiritual splendor. We live in a world of great beauty and great joy, where all things seem and are to us perfect. And yet in the perfect world, though we are not perfect, we see the possibilities of greater perfection, not only in ourselves, but in the environment in which we find ourselves. We are conscious of such joys and such magnificence. And yet in all this, there is the hand of man. Because man himself has been given the divine grace and the divine power to fashion his own salvation and his own destiny, whether it is in your world, through generations of experience and time and bodies, on this side too, for the worlds in which we exist are what we ourselves have created by our thoughts and our lives and our being. Your mother who stands here, what an extraordinary woman she is, and what a beautiful character, and how she herself must have, through generations of time, experienced much. There was a time when she was so very close to you, a time when she was even nearer to you, if one can so say, than a mother. When she was all to you, she was everything that one could hope for. And in all these varying conditions of life in which you, she, and all of us have found ourselves, we have learned through all these various experiences to lose, in a sense, our identities and yet retain them, and yet at the same time become so completely one spirit. And that, I think, is a solution to all life. It is the answer to all prayers. It is the realization of all truths and religions, all knowledge, that though we remain separate entities or separate souls, we are all one spirit. And you are as much now your mother, as indeed your mother is as much now you, or I, or he whom you call Chopin, or he whom you call the Pharos. Whoever these souls are, they are all one spirit. These varying bodies, which we can see, as it were, all entwined, which represent all our varying degrees of unfoldment and development, all these bodies, which are now long since dust, all these bodies have their etheric counterpart. And it is interesting in this land or this world of ours to be able to see ourselves as spiritual selves in varying guises, in varying forms, to be able to assemble together and to say to ourselves, this was me in such an incarnation. This was me when I was he or she. And in that incarnation I became this, or I became that. And all these entwined bodies helping to create the perfect soul. And the spirit that binds us all together being the same. These groups of which we speak are so immense, so tremendous. I wish I could explain this. There was a time when there was a country long since dead, long since buried, long since disappeared from the face of the earth called Atlantis. In that place also you had an incarnation. And this is long, long time ago. And this, as far as I know, must be your first breath of life. The moment I have no details of it. My memory only goes back and starts in your Egyptian incarnation. But somewhere beyond that is this other life, this other beginning, this source from which you sprung, and from which possibly we all sprang. This I hope to be able to discover more of, as I know it is something which will bring to your great joy and interest. I want, so desperately, to talk to you on all manner of things, not only just even your incarnations, though I know you, and by discussing those it will suffice, and there are many other things too, things appertaining to our worlds, the world truly a spirit which flesh does not inhabit. It is true that when we discuss the earthly lives and the development of the soul through these experiences, we are unfolding to some extent the wisdom. But what is so amazing, what is so remarkable, and what is perhaps the most important and perfect of all things, is the result of all these lives, the result of all these experiences, the result of all these necessary incarnations. That, of course, is the perfect and the complete. But even that is, in a sense, perhaps, at the beginning, because I am conscious of greater worlds spread out before me, which you and others will partake of in time. Because this is a condition of eternal life of which we speak, where an incarnation of earth is but a drop of sand in the desert, and the life that is to be, in which greater freedom, greater realization may come, is so immense that it is an impossible task to discuss, only but to give you a small indication, as indeed one could truthfully say, I have a small indication of, and it shall come, that the lives of which you have many lived have made possible that which is on the threshold, when you shall be released from earthly bonds for the last time, and you shall partake upon yourself the freedom of the spheres and the life that is immortal, and all truth shall be revealed to your gratitude. This that I discuss with you from time to time is but the prelude to these things. It may give you some blessing, some comfort, and some joy, and some help while yet upon earth. But whatever I may say to you, whatever knowledge I may give you, must seem infinitesimal to that which is. Nevertheless, child, I shall do my utmost. I know that you sit patiently, or should I say that you wait patiently for this truth. I should do my utmost to reveal it.
Thank you very much, Lucius.
As you sit, or perhaps I should say as you lay upon your bed, since you do not seem to be able to sit up, but rather to recline, which possibly some might say is rather appropriate when I'm discussing your own incarnation, since it was a passion to recline rather than to sit. But even so, all around you here, unseen by you, are all your, or many of your, old friends, old acquaintances, old loves, your husband, your mother, your father, your brother, there's he whom you call Frederick, and whom you know best perhaps and love most as Chopin, though if you did but know it, some of his other incarnations were just as beautiful and just as revealing and just as important as that which you prefer to know him as. But here in this house, which is truly blessed, are many souls gathered, not only now as I speak of you, but often in the ordinary daily routine of life, when life seems trying and difficult. How often some soul steps out to the darkness to take your hand and try to calm you and help you. You do not see that they are there. They try to give you that strength that you need. Indeed, the last few months you have been given great strength. Great power has been poured into you. Great spiritual vitality has been given to you, so that you may stay a little longer on your earth, so that you shall find some peace, and above all, that you should find some more aspects of truth revealed, so that when you come here, most truly, the knots will be completely untied, and you shall be truly free, and nothing shall hold you to earth. Do not grudge yourself these last few years that may yet remain. They are for good, for your own good, and for the others near and dear to you. Time may hang heavy, but we shall try and lighten, if we may and can, the burden. And you will find blessings, and you will find some peace, some joy in the revelations that we shall give you. I wish it were possible to do so much more for you. I know how desperately you are anxious to find truth more fully revealed, and it is my task to endeavor to give you some of it. But be patient with me and with those who may come out of themselves, and above all, be patient with yourself and with those around you. You are blessed, but there are many other blessings yet to follow, of which it is time in their life that they should come. And you will remember the words I say, and you will say, this was what Lucius said. You will see, my child, when you sit again next week, I will continue in more detail our incarnations. But as I say, forgive me if I sometimes seem to falter or to fail, for that which I try to give you is not easy, and certainly at times most difficult. But I shall respond to all that you think. It is not necessary, indeed, for you to ask me questions. I shall respond to your thoughts, and you will see your unspoken thoughts shall be answered where possible and where necessary. I look forward to our next meeting, and I feel sure then that I shall be able to give you many of the things which you are seeking, gradually at least. Just be patient, child. My blessing and my peace be with you. Very well, child.
Very well, Lucius. Thank you very, very much. So blessed.